JC.
We be up on Highway 25 and they're doing some road work up here. 35 mile an hour speed limit. How's your day?
Hey, so far. All right, watered the side this morning, so got that out of the way. It's going to be awfully hot today. It was hot out there when we got through. But, yeah, we headed to Greenville after lunch and got a couple of things to do. And got to take the granddaughter to soccer practice this afternoon. We usually do that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But otherwise, just a regular day.
We're coming back from Cherokee, North Carolina, where it's about 75 degrees now, and we're about 20 miles from home, Jerry. Had a nice time, took Bernice up to her happy spot in Cherokee Casino. Coming back lighter than we went up with.
When you bet against the house, that's what happens, I guess, but hope you're not too much lighter.
I paid the all the fee that you gotta pay for what do they call that? Not a reservation fee. Anyways, it's for the casino and they charge you $37.50 and what is it? Hotel tax and all that. I think come back about $60 less. But Bernice had a $100 bill from her birthday that was burning up her pockets, so we didn't lose all that much.
The entertainment value is worth that much, especially in Georgia. I know our daughter and son-in-law, they go up there occasionally, not very often, every once in a while. I read they have a new one. I say it's not new now, but the Catawbas have a new one up there at somewhere around Kings Mountain, I think, somewhere up in that area. I'm sure it's not as nice as the one at Cherokee is.
And I don't like the traffic pattern going up there. We went up there one time last year, and I think that'll be our last. And it just a bunch of Chinese trucking things hooked together. It's decent. Don't get me wrong, but it's just Cherokee Casino is beautiful and has a trout stream running underneath of it. And the room didn't cost us anything. Oh, they had a new one on now. If you check in early, it's a $25 early check-in fee. Boy, they figure out everything, don't they?
Contact. Yeah, this is K9JFM. I just hooked up this 2 meter gear and want to check and see if it's getting out there. I'm over here in Mills River.
Yeah, you're full quieting. I'm up here on Highway 25 north of Greenville. Go ahead, Jerry, and tell him where you're at and give him a signal report.
Full quieting. No noise at all on mine. I'm in Anderson, not too far from exit 19.
Roger that. Yeah, I'm up here just south of Asheville, and I had been having this 2 meter up in months there. Just want to check and see if it's still working. Appreciate it there. Y'all guys come back to me.
This is N0TR, Tom, and I live in Greer. Go ahead, Jerry.
You got it. You're full quiet, and no noise on this end in Anderson. But, yeah, Tom, they get you hotel taxes and fees, room fees, and they just got all kinds of taxes that nail you. It seems like anyway, no matter where you go. I've never heard of an early check-in fee though. That's something new. but they don't mind you checking out. They want you to check out early, but then they want to, if you check in early, they're gonna get you.
It's scholar to figure out why. Yeah, they get you coming and going. And like the big sign says over the door, Jerry, this is where two fools met. But we don't go up there and spend a lot of money because we don't have a lot of money. We just go up there for the entertainment. We don't go to concerts and movies and all of that stuff. We only go up there once or twice a year. Reese had, it wasn't birthday money. She had $100 from the kids for Mother's Day money. And so, really, we didn't lose too much. It's just all in fun. I don't like driving up there north of Hendersonville through that construction project. I had a huge truck with a great big chrome bumper on it. Man, he was using that Jake brake like you wouldn't believe, and he was running about 80 miles an hour. And then I had a Tesla that was a Lane Dodger, and he went zigging in and out. And then I parked in a handicap parking place there at the casino, and this stupid idiot come in there and squeezed in between two of us handicap cars with stickers. And so I left him a friendly greeting on his windshield.
Stand parking lots. They're terrible. Most of them don't have enough room. Some of them do. Most of them don't have enough room to park. People always squeezing, not parking in parking places, parking just about anywhere they can get. Sam's is a little better, but gosh, the traffic around that place down here is so, it's just awful. I go in the back way and park on the far side of the parking lot, on the far side from the entrance. Yeah, it does me a little, give me a little exercise to get to the door, but I can't stand parking lots. The angle ones are a little easier to get in and out of, but the ones that are, you know, just, where you just pull straight in, those things are terrible. And I always try to get on one where I can pull, since I got backup cameras, and I always get it where I can pull up through it and then pull out, and I can back up there where I am on the lines and on the line at the back. But, yeah, they, the kids have been to Vegas, they've been to Vegas a couple of times. I think she won $1,000 last time they were there, but they had a good time, maybe once every few years, but they've been at least, maybe they've been just once, but I know they went one time year before last, maybe. But they like to go to, they go to Cherokee once in a while, they like to take the kids to Dollywood, and they go to the beach now, times they go to Tybee Island. You know, that's a pretty good spot. It's not quite as busy as these other places are, but seems more desolate, especially when they go, which is not during the peak part of the seasons. I just don't travel. I don't travel that much anymore. I don't. The traffic is terrible, like you said, from Anderson to Spartanburg. That is back. That is absolute horror.
You got that right. It's just not my cup of tea anymore. This car is a road hog. It's a highway dog, just Avalon, and it's a pleasure to drive. But I just, you know, you got to contend with those Lane Dodgers and tailgaters and all that. You never go fast enough. I mean, you could be 15, 20 mile an hour above the speed limit. They'll still be on your tail within a half a car length. We was taught when we were kids to keep one car length for each 10 mile an hour. They don't teach that anymore. They teach something about counting so many seconds. And it's just unbelievable. And if you're in the fast lane and you can't get out, they'll still come up behind you and bumper to bumper. People just aren't very considerate anymore, Jerry. That's all there is to it. Not like in the old days.
Basically drove for a living, I guess, when I was in sales, and I put about $50,000 a year on my company car, and I'd fly another $30,000, I guess, maybe $20,000 or $30,000 some years, not all the time. But I just get in the middle lane, Tom, and just put it on 70 and just go, and if they want to get around me, I'll move to the side. But it's hard moving to the side when you got people in oncoming traffic, the way some of these intersections for, you know, on 85 or you just can't, you get in that right-hand lane, you're going to get stuck there. You can't, yeah, they're coming to oncoming, people won't move over, and they won't, you know, they don't let us, they try to squeeze in. It's just crazy, especially up around Lawrence Road. But, I mean, we go that way, you know, a couple of times a week at least. But now I was taught the same thing, one car length every 10 miles an hour, and course, there wasn't traffic, wasn't as much traffic in those days as there is now by a long shot. And I've driven in Houston. Houston's the worst traffic I've ever been in, I guess. And they say there's some other place. But when you're going to Houston, Dom, you know, the only place you can go is into the ocean. You're kind of dead-ended there. And I know I was going down there. I was calling some customers. I thought they were having a, I don't know if they were having a shot show in Houston that year or not, but they had something down there at the Astrodome. I wrote it was like riding around one of these roundabouts. I rode around it a half a dozen times, never could figure out how to get off and get to it. So I drove back to Austin where I was staying and said, "The heck with that."
For a moment. Well, our son-in-law just sent me a text a while ago, and he's just leaving Houston. He's been down there for about a week doing flow tests on gas turbines, General Electric gas turbines, I guess, at a generating plant. Boy, did he have to go through the security checks before they'd even let him through the door. Like 3 days of training and security checks and all kinds of stuff. But I used to go to those kinds of places, and it was really interesting. I worked on the water valves, setting them and inspecting them at, there's a bicycle and a car coming at the same time. I set the valves, made sure they were set right and running right at the city of Denver, and they could process 1 billion a day when that plant was complete. I don't know how many of those long things with each tank inside of those things was 250,000 gallons, Jerry. And then I worked on the dam gates at San Angelo in Texas, god awful place. And then I worked on it was 1,500 horsepower pumps, I think, at the Navajo Indian Irrigation Project out in the middle of the desert. That was at Farmington. And when the good Lord made the earth, he made that the armpit, Jerry. Over.
I've been in some of those armpits, tiny towns out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, you were talking about turbines. I said, yeah, you'd really been interested when they were putting the turbines in down here at Harwell Dam. Those things are huge and just gigantic things. And when they were, of course, I was living there when they were building it, and my dad was in the Corps of Engineers in World War II, so he had a lot of friends that were working down there. He knew, actually, some of them, not from his battalion, but he knew some of the guys down there. They even had the Army had a little railroad down there where they were running there with these Army, like GE switchers, maybe. They would run that equipment in and out of there and build the material, but those things were gigantic. And there's still some pictures of the construction. There was a movie somebody put out that found, you know, when they were building it, because we'd go down and watch them. And, you know, they always said that somebody got poured into the concrete, but one of my wife's and I, schoolmates, her dad was killed there, but I don't think he was poured in the concrete like they say was in Hoover and some of these other bigger dams. But that bridge going across there, boy, that, you know, that thing was built in the 60s. That bridge is not in good shape. They're going to have to replace it one time, some point in the future. That was a gigantic project for this area. It made Harwell a boom town for a long time.
That's the GPS talking. But, I seen the thing on the History Channel one time, and they said that was over-exaggerated about them dropping bodies into the, accidentally, in the Hoover Dams and different ones, because it would make a void in the concrete, and so they had to be retrieved. But one way or the other, it would have been a pretty horrible way to die.
Or other type work-related accidents, that equipment is so big and so heavy, you know, it'd be real easy for somebody to get trapped, especially back in the 40s and 50s when people aren't as safety conscious as they are now. But those guys that do that kind of work, they're extremely cautious guys, and they do it for a living. I ran into one of the engineers that worked for Hercules, you know, the powder company, and he did the blasting the whole damn. It's been years ago. I ran into him. I was in a sales. I was actually staying in a motel down in Alabama, and this guy, he was a good bit older than I was, of course. He was probably my dad's age, but this has been 25 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. He was just a young guy when he was working. But they used, diesel fuel and fertilizer for most of the blasting. They didn't use dynamite because it was a little too dangerous in the heat. He said, I can't tell you how many tons we removed from that place, but good. He was talking about using the caps, you know, the azide, I think it's red azide caps they use for blasting caps. But he was telling the stories, you know, they told. And he said, I asked him, I said, would anybody get poured in? He said, nah. He said, there are a lot of rumors about that. And he said, that's mostly just folklore. He'd worked on a bunch of big projects over the years. He said, nah. He said, no project I ever worked on had anybody like that, anything. I said, a lot of people got hurt, but just sometimes it was from falling rocks or having equipment topple over or getting caught between something. And he said, there's some of that going on. He said, but that being poured into the concrete thing is more fable than fact.
Miss N0 TR within 40s, is she? Yeah, Jerry, I agree. I was working at the time at this large machine shop that I worked at for 32 years, and we rebuilt the walking foot for a, I don't know, it was Missouri? Yeah, I guess it was, just south of Kansas City. And the maintenance, head maintenance guy had come down over that shovel, and he invited three of us, the two machinists that worked on it, and I was the head electrician. He wanted us to come up, and he put us on that shovel while it was working. And they all talk about Big Brutus at Hallowell can just being so big. It was 80 cubic yards. But this, and that was a shovel. This drag line was 140 cubic yards that it was on. And I don't know how many thousand horsepower it was, Jerry. I seen one yesterday that was 60,000, I know. They ran 7,200 volts into them, usually, sometimes 4,160. And there was no way out in front of it. It got dark, and there was just holes all over the place, perfectly lined up. And it was like over, I don't know, an acre. And this old boy was out there, and he was dropping bags of something in them holes, and I went out and talked to him, and then he ganged those wires together, and I said, well, don't you think that's a little dangerous, smoking a cigarette and doing that? He said, no, it's blasting powder. He says, it takes an electrical charge to set it off. I don't know. I just don't think that smoking should have been allowed near that blasting powder either.
About that, it sounds pretty risky to me. A lot of farmers used to, back in the 50s, it was very easy for somebody to go out and buy a cap, you know, and blow up a tree stump or something like that. Farmers use it a lot. And it wasn't anything new to them, a little diesel fuel and fertilizer and put it under a tree stump and it'd blow it up in a heartbeat. And if you put too much in it, it'd blow it into splinters. But, that's 140 cubic yards. That'd be, man, that's 104. That's about 140 tons of dirt, I think, in a cubic yard of dirt
dump truck loads or something. I must have my cubic yards wrong, maybe, but that's a lot of material though.
Yeah, it was one of the biggest in the United States. I think there was one up in Minnesota that was bigger. But, it was 140 cubic yards. I remember that because I remember Brutus was around 80. But a shovel's got a real big boom on it in comparison to a drag line. The drag line's usually used at first for the overburden, and then a shovel would come along and dig out the coal seam. But at this time, the drag line did it all. And the cables inside of that thing were run by those thousands of horsepower. I remember them being 4-inch, but some of them I saw on this History Channel thing yesterday, or Story Channel there on 4-4, they were 5-inch. But then the booms, Jerry, was pressurized with, I believe, helium or some inert gas. And so if that boom got a crack in it, the air pressure on that boom would go down, and then they'd stop the shovel and find the leak and repair it. That was kind of interesting, because that boom, I don't know what that tubing was, but it was big.
You are in 4DJC. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I don't know that much about heavy equipment. I've seen, you know, seen stuff on TV about it, but I don't, never had any experience with it. I know you're talking about doing the whole, out in the oil well stuff, and somebody was trying to recruit me. It's been years ago, probably in the 70s, trying to recruit me to go out to Texas, Oklahoma, and sell wellhead stuff for oil rigs. And I said, I don't know anything about it. He said, you don't have to know anything about it. He said, this is back after the, when the oil embargo was going on and that sort of thing. And they were capping off his wells because they weren't getting the prices they wanted to. Then when they did, they'd uncap them. And some type of well, it wasn't a rocker or some type of wellhead device. He said, all you got to do is be out there when they get ready to do it. And he said, you can sell them one on the spot. And it sounded pretty lucrative until I, of course, I've traveled to Texas and, you know, that area several times over the years since the 70s. And I tell you, West Texas and New Mexico and Oklahoma, there ain't nothing out there but that's sand and sandstorms and tumbleweeds.
And rattlesnakes. And those real twisty trees, mesquite, I think they call them. I didn't even want to get out of the car after I seen the size of them rattlesnakes. Those boys had caught, they had pictures of them. And one of those great big crew cab Ford trucks had one hanging over the door that almost reached from its tail up over the handle back down to the ground and was about 4 inches in diameter. It's the biggest thing diamondback I believe I ever seen in my life. But, I just didn't care about walking out through there. And I thought I would. I wanted to go out and kind of screw around a little bit with a rattlesnake, but no, not after that. And when I got there, one old boy was being hauled off, and I'm sure I told you this, but he got bit between the little finger and that webbing on your hand. But the bad part was he was allergic to that Corfab, that antivenom. And they started administering it, so I was told, on the way to the hospital. It stopped his heart. He was allergic to it. That was a lose-lose situation. And he was the guy that picked up all the snakes when they killed them. But it wasn't a very pretty place. Now, I talked to a guy on the radio the other day, and he says, oh, there's all houses out in there now. There wasn't nothing out in there when I was there in the 80s. Jerry, gotta go. We're getting close to home, and nature is calling, so I need to get in the house and take care of that. And it's been a pleasure talking to you as usual. You have a wonderful day, you and the wife, and I'll say 73s and be clear with your final. This ends your OTR.
You and Bernice, take it easy. I'm glad you had a good trip. At least it wasn't quite I call it good if you didn't lose any more than that. But you guys have a good afternoon. I'll talk to you a little bit later on. 02R and 4DJC clear.
Yeah, you got to have it to lose it, Jerry. 02R clear.